What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump Tuesday said the dispute between Qatar and Saudi Arabia indicates his stance against terrorism is paying off. Mr. Trump, who visited Riyadh last month, spoke with the Saudi King Salman Tuesday, stressing the need for Gulf unity after Riyadh and five other countries cut ties with Qatar over its ties to terrorism. White House spokesman Sean Spicer was asked about the dispute.
The United States continues to be in close communication with all the parties to resolve the issues and restore cooperation, which is so important to regional security there. I think that there is note that his message of toughness on terror finance and extremism is being heeded by countries in the region. But the U.S. still wants to see this issue de-escalated and resolved immediately, keeping with the principles that the president laid out in terms of defeating and terror financing and extremism.
U.S. State Department spokesman Heather Nauert, meanwhile, said Doha has more to work to do to combat extremism.
We recognize that Qatar has made some great efforts to try to stop financing of terror groups, including prosecuting suspected financiers, freezing assets, and introducing stringent controls on its banking system there. However, let me make this clear, they have made progress, but they still have work to do. More work needs to be done.
Regional analyst Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco said, ironically, Qatar's accusers have themselves backed terrorists.
More likely, the concern is that Qatar, through its state-owned but independent news media organization, Al Jazeera, has allowed for political space for opponents of these other regimes.
Qatar's foreign minister has denied his country is funding terrorists and said Kuwait is trying to mediate the crisis. This is VOA News. At least three people were killed in eastern Kenya Tuesday when their vehicle hit an improvised explosive device near Laboi. It's the latest in a series of attacks and explosions, most of which have been claimed by the Somali-based insurgent group Al-Shabaab. Paris police Tuesday shot and wounded a man who attacked and wounded a policeman with a hammer, shouting, "This is for Syria," outside Notre Dame Cathedral. American tourist Joanne Paulus was a witness.
I was right at the door, the entrance, and we heard people rushing through the door, trying to get in, and the police behind them. And the police were just telling us, "Move to the front, move to the front."
There was no immediate claim of responsibility, no clear motive made public. In Britain, meanwhile, police named the third of three attackers in a London attack late Saturday that killed seven, wounded dozens. The third attacker, identified as 22-year-old Yusuf Zagba, all three killed by police. Prime Minister Theresa May Tuesday said the Domestic Security Service, MI5, and the police will review how the three could have launched such an attack.
MI5 and the police have already said after the Manchester attack that they would be looking and reviewing how they dealt with that, and I would expect them to do exactly the same in relation to London Bridge.
At least one of the assailants was known to authorities, raising concerns about a lack of resources to prevent such attacks. U.S.-backed Syrian rebels have begun the long-awaited assault on the Islamic State-held Syrian city of Raqqa. The commander of the al-Sanadid fighters, Bandar el-Jarbah, said the Syrian Democratic Forces have been chasing Islamic State some 300 kilometers across the country. Meanwhile, in the south, the U.S. Defense Department said its warplane struck at pro-government forces operating close to a base used by U.S. Special Forces and U.S.-backed fighters. It's located in a so-called deconfliction zone worked out with Russia. Israeli authorities have reportedly advanced plans to build hundreds of Jewish settlements in the West Bank, including creation of the first new settlement in more than 20 years. The non-governmental organization Peace Now said a defense ministry committee approved plans for the new Amichai settlement. The U.S. Defense Department, in an annual report to Congress released Tuesday, said China is likely to construct more military bases overseas, including Pakistan, following development of one in the East African country of Djibouti, a strategic region near the Red Sea, where the U.S. also has a base. France Tuesday proposed at the UN Security Council back creation of a West African force to combat terrorism, drug and human trafficking in Africa's Sahel region. Five nations making up the Sahel, Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania and Niger, have agreed to set up special counterterrorism units. The vast arid zone has been viewed as a breeding ground for jihadists. The draft resolution could come before the council next week. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boateng in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Lesotho's former Prime Minister Thomas Thabane returns home today to form a new government following Prime Minister Pakalitha Mosisili's defeat in Saturday's elections.
In these past 2 years, we have seen incidents whereby we are experiencing no rule of law. We have seen the misuse of the security forces. So I think he has reached the time whereby he has to be released by his own nation.
Samuyene Unsekele is the Secretary General of the All Basotho Convention Party of Lesotho. A new study says one-third of patients in 10 African countries start HIV treatment late. And Uganda's president promises to improve security and create job opportunities for thousands of unemployed youths.
President Museveni told members of the Ugandan parliament in his State of Nation address that his government will ensure there is improved security for people and property across the country.
That's reporter Mugume Davis Rakarinchi in Kampala. Sudan's president offers to intervene and ease tensions among Gulf Arab states. African countries struggle to expand and implement maternity leave. And we'll look at how Cape Verde is on the front line of climate change. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Lesotho's former Prime Minister Thomas Thabane is expected to return home today, Wednesday, to form a new government after his All Basotho Convention Party took 40 seats out of a total of 120 seats in Parliament in last Saturday's election. The Democratic Congress Party of current Prime Minister Pakalitha Mosisili won 30 seats. Mr. Thabane fled to South Africa in 2014 in fear of his life following an army mutiny. He returned in 2015 to participate in parliamentary elections and was defeated. Samuyene Unsekele, Secretary General of the All Basotho Convention Party, says Mosisili's defeat was made possible by a number of factors, including the lack of rule of law, rampant corruption, misuse of security forces, and declining economy.
As opposed to the parties in government, ADC with its partner, which is Alliance of Democrats, Basotho National Party, Reform Congress of Lesotho, has managed to have 63 seats, which they can form a new government with. So as it is now, we have issued a statement of intent to form government. So we form government with those four parties. ABC leading, which means former prime minister is coming back as the new prime minister-elect.
Now, why do you think the prime minister, Mr. Mosisili, why do you think he has lost the election?
It's because he has lost popularity among the nation.
What do you mean he lost popularity?
He has been in government for long, and if you have been in government for long, you have a challenge of delivery. So I think he's more challenged that there are so many challenges he faced. The issues of corruption is in his government, the issue of misuse of the security forces, which the world knows that Lesotho has got a problem with the security, whereby in these past 2 years, we have seen incidents whereby we are experiencing no rule of law. We have seen the misuse of the security forces, whereby among the security guys, the army, there have been some arrests and other officers have run out of the country. And above all, former commander Maparangwe Mahao was killed. So you can see we had a serious problem with the security. The other matter is on account of instability, the economy of the country declined, investors ran away. So the country was now starving like anything. So I think he has reached the time whereby he has to be released by his own nation.
Where is Mr. Thabane now?
He is in Ficksburg. Ficksburg is a neighboring town, but on the South African side.
So we can say he's in South Africa.
He is in South Africa. By tomorrow, he will come for the press conference where they are going to declare their new coalition.
It's time now for Mr. Thabane to form a new government. Will you be willing to bring in all members of the opposition to be in the government, including even the Prime Minister, Mr. Musisili's people.
As I've highlighted earlier, we had our own coalition as opposition parties, which was formed of the newly formed party from his side, formed by his deputy, Munyane Mulelik, which is Alliance of Democrats. We had BNP, which is Basotho National Party, RCL, which is Reform Congress of Lesotho. We have now declared that we are forming a government with them. But we are also extending a hand that we are amicable to allow other people to come and join us. But they will join us at our own terms because we have declared a government on our own. So we will have separate agreements with them while we are having a consolidated agreement for ourselves.
What do you think can be done to keep the security or the army at bay, you know, not to interfere in politics in Lesotho?
The country needs a drastic reforming process that will make sure that politicians don't have a direct control over the army.
So you believe Lesotho needs a professional army?
Yeah, we would have a professional army whereby even the commander of the army is not only chosen by the sitting prime minister, but there are some process to actually have choose such a commander through a parliamentary process.
Mr. Semenyane, we thank you very much again and congratulations for your party's victory.
Thank you very much, sir. A pleasure.
Semenyane Nsekele is the Secretary General of the All Basotho Convention Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Maseru. The tiny nation of Lesotho is one of a few countries in the world, including the United States, and one of just two in Africa without a mandated paid leave for new mothers. International watchdogs and activists say maternity leave is often poorly enforced, especially since so many African women work in the informal sector. Viewer's Anita Power reports from the Lesotho capital, Maseru.
When Mahopotso Letsi had her youngest child, she took a three-month break from her job as a riveter to care for her baby boy. Her employer, a large factory in Lesotho's capital, paid her during that time. She got a grand total of just more than $23. It was not enough to meet her needs, she says, but she had no choice. That amount was not even a quarter of her monthly salary. But she was grateful, she says, because she lives in one of the few countries that does not mandate maternity benefits. Parliament member and All Basotho Congress spokesman Moeketsi Majuru says paid leave is not a kindness. It is a necessity. He says his party wants to implement a three-month maternity leave policy.
We want everybody to participate and participate fully in the economy and without the insecurity or the difficult choices of raising the future of Lesotho and having to go to work for a minimum wage. It is, in fact, an empowerment process that we need to put in place as a policy.
The International Labour Organization recommends maternity leave of at least 18 weeks. But in a survey, the organization found no African government offers that to all mothers. South Africa leads, with its law mandating 17 weeks. Other African nations are trying to expand their policies. Rwanda last year expanded benefits to 12 weeks. Nigeria's government recently expanded leave for civil servants to 6 paid months, but the private sector is only required to give 3 months. In Kenya, employers have strongly objected to a recent proposal to offer at least 6 months' leave, the last 3 unpaid and voluntary. They say they cannot afford such a plan. The ILO estimates a universal maternity cash benefit would cost low and lower middle income countries less than 0.5% of their economy. But the organization acknowledges cash-strapped countries like Lesotho struggle in the face of more urgent needs. Professor Anita Bosch, who researches gender and workplace issues at the University of Stellenbosch Business School, says societies cannot afford to deny newborns the bonding and formative experiences that will set them up for life. But she says few women in Africa benefit from maternity leave, because these laws only apply to the formal sector. The ILO estimates worldwide less than a third of women hold formal employment.
In the informal sector, people are so desperate for work. Remember, our unemployment levels are at extreme level. So people are just desperate to have a job and to hang on to a job. And so for that, they'll do whatever, and it makes them highly exploitable.
In most African nations, the law puts the burden on employers to pay maternity benefits. For mothers without jobs, there's often little help from the state. Letsi says that worries her. Her 18-year-old daughter just married, and like a quarter of Lesotho's population, cannot find a job. Letsi is the breadwinner for her extended family and says she desperately needs help. She wonders, what will they do when her first grandchild comes along? Anita Powell, VOA News, Maseru, Lesotho.
Today's Wednesday, June 7th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. Ugandan president says his government will work to improve security and create job opportunities for thousands of unemployed youths. The president says his government intends to open up vocational schools and also fund youth projects in the coming days. Mungumi Davis Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
President Museveni told members of the Ugandan parliament in his State of Nation address that his government will ensure there is improved security for people and property across the country. Mr. Museveni says the government will buy surveillance cameras and other equipment for security operatives in and around the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The police will also acquire greater forensic technical capacity, the details of which I would not like to go into here. Using the limited means available to the police in the form of police dogs to detect explosives, scanners, metal detectors, etc., the police backed by the UPDF, where there is good planning, can guarantee security against any lawless or terrorist action.
In recent days, there have been murders of prominent government officials, members of security forces and the clergy. Museveni also says the government will allocate more funds to improve the existing infrastructure, especially roads in the country.
So using Uganda government money, we are in the process of tarmacking the following roads. Mpiji, Kanoni, Sembabwe, Villa Maria, Musitama, Uganda, Mayingo, Majang, Rusia, Soroti, Katakui, Moroto, Oruyo, Ameka, Guru, Kitugum, Musingo, Nakapiripiri, Tanamayo, Nyende, Mugende, Kakumura, Chivare, Kagadi, Ndaiga, Nyakashita, Ivanda, Kamwenge, Fort Potro.
He says the development of infrastructure is important in lowering the cost of doing business and therefore maximizes the profits of companies. Still in the transport sector, President Museveni says his government is also targeting to complete a rail network connecting Uganda to the coast. He says such will reduce the cost of transport. For example, he says a 40-foot container costs around $3,500 from Mombasa to Kampala by road compared to $1,500 by rail, and takes less time in comparison to road network. He says the government also intends to improve the agriculture sector by giving soft loans to commercial farmers and using modern agriculture methods. He says Ugandans should start using irrigation methods than relying on rainfall. There have been droughts in some parts of Uganda which led to famine. Another issue President Museveni wants to deal with is creating job opportunities, especially for the youth. He says the government will equip the youth with various vocational skills such as bakery, embroidery, textile weaving, shoemaking, and knitting. President Museveni also says his government will introduce policies that will help attract foreign direct investment to boost the economy. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
A large team of international researchers says a significant number of HIV-positive individuals in nearly a dozen countries, including 10 in Africa, delay starting life-saving drugs. Experts say there are many benefits to early treatment, including limiting the spread of the AIDS virus. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
UNAIDS has set a 90-90-90 target in dealing with the HIV epidemic. By 2020, it's hoped that 90% of all people with the virus will know their status, 90% will receive antiretroviral therapy, and 90% of those receiving treatment will have viral suppression. If the goal were a school exam, Haiti, Vietnam, Nigeria, Namibia, Swaziland, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Tanzania, Uganda, and Zambia would flunk right now. A study spearheaded by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention looked at countries in the Caribbean, Asia, and Africa and found that one-third of patients diagnosed with HIV are presenting late for treatment. HIV expert Andrew Auld is Malawi country director at the CDC.
So some of the key things that still need to be done in these countries to further reduce the prevalence of advanced disease at HIV treatment initiation are to scale up testing strategies that facilitate HIV diagnosis at earlier disease stages, and also treatment policies that mean that patients, once they are diagnosed, are eligible to start HIV treatment the same day.
Not only does immediate treatment with antiretroviral drugs mean avoiding life-threatening complications, Ald said it reduces the risk of transmission. An earlier study found treatment reduces the risk of spreading HIV to a sexual partner by up to 96%. Ald says the main reason people wait until they're very sick to go for treatment is they're unaware that quick action increases their chances of survival.
HIV diagnosis is not a death sentence. Excellent HIV treatment is available, and people can live long, healthy, productive lives if they are adherent to the HIV treatment, and that will increase demand for both testing and treatment services.
The good news, says Ald, is that between 2004 and 2015, the percentage of people in 8 countries receiving early treatment for HIV increased, in some cases, by nearly 40%. The study, which reviewed more than 694,000 treatment records of those 15 years and older, is published in the journal Morbidity and Mortality Weekly. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir is offering to intervene and ease rising tensions between a number of Gulf Arab states and Qatar. Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain have recalled their ambassadors from Qatar and closed all borders, citing Doha's relations with Iran and its alleged support for groups such as the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, and Al-Qaeda. Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says President Bashir has appealed to the countries to refrain from further escalation and to resolve their differences in the interest of the peoples of the Arab world.
In fact, we are feeling very sorry for what happened already. And the deterioration, which was very rapid between almost brothers in the same area, and this area suffers from instability and war and almost a chaos. So he called for to cool down and to make contact. And he already contacted Prince of Kuwait, and he talked to him. And as you know, Prince of Kuwait already visited Saudi Arabia today. And there are some efforts actually going on to solve the problem and to dismantle the situation from the tension and to reach stability. In fact, if these things go like this and deterioration going on, this is not for the interest of the area. This can make ground hold for Iran and for others actually to penetrate the solidarity of the Gulf countries as well. So our president and our efforts, we will try to ease the tension and to make contacts and to try to solve a problem peacefully.
Mr. Minister, there used to be kind of a unanimity of cooperation among the Gulf states. What happened? What led to this escalation right now?
Actually, we don't know why this happened like this. As you know, before 2 years, there is a withdrawal from ambassadors from Qatar. With these three countries as well, Saudi Arabia, United Emirates, and Bahrain, before 2 years. But now the situation is even worse. Nobody knows why this happened like this. There is a leakage actually before 1 week, as you know, in the news that there is some announcement from the Prince of Qatar, and he actually said he didn't say this and things should be cooled down. But on the contrary, it becomes even more worse. And started, you know, propaganda, media, and so forth. And suddenly this happened. We don't know, actually. I don't know why this happened.
So this has nothing to do with the differences in the fight against terrorism?
They are saying this. But I think Qatar is involved in the war in Yemen. They have gone some troops, maybe small, out there. And maybe some of the Muslim brothers are in Qatar. This is not new thing. This is before maybe years are there. Prince of Qatar calling for cooling down and good relations with Iran. And this is also not new because President of Iran visited Qatar before 1 year ago or 2 years ago. But So far, actually, the situation is cloudy. I can't say exactly why this deterioration happened, but it suddenly I'm going worse. And actually, we don't want it to be more even bad like that. We want to stop it like this and to find out what is exactly the problem.
Sudan Information Minister Ahmed Bilal was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. The announcement by U.S. President Donald Trump to pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Change Agreement caused a global outcry. But perhaps no countries are harder hit than island nations such as Cabo Verde, which is threatened by rising ocean levels and scant rainfall. Jansenio Delgado is a renewable energy expert at the Cabo Verde-based ECOWAS Center for Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency, known as ICRI. He talks to Ricky Stryak about Cape Verde's reaction and the country's efforts to increase its reliance on renewable energy.
For a country like Cabo Verde, that is in the middle of the ocean and with very little raining, this question of this Paris Agreement is very important. As you know, the question of the oceans, the question of the raising of the temperature worldwide can affect Cape Verde directly, as we are island and most of our population is located in the coast zone. So for us, apart from other issues, this question of the ocean is very crucial. That's why we consider that this Paris Agreement is very important for the country.
What was the reaction when the U.S. withdrew from the Paris Agreement? Will that have an effect on a country like Cabo Verde?
Of course it will have. I cannot tell you the official reaction of the government of Cabo Verde because I cannot speak on their behalf. But I think, in overall, the reaction is not positive. I mean, we think that this will have impact in the world. And, of course, being one of the more polluted countries in the world that and being out of this agreement, the U.S. could play a very important role in this process. And if they are out, it can contribute for the degradation of the environment. So we are basically expecting that this decision from the United States, the government, will have impact in the overall implementation of the Paris Agreement.
As far as Cabo Verde's efforts go, last time I was there, there was a big push by the government to make the country 100% reliant on renewable energy. As I understand it, the 2020 deadline for that goal, it has been removed. But is that still a goal of the Cabo Verde government, and what is being done to reach that goal?
This was a goal established by the government of Cape Verde. We have had elections last year and change of the government. And the new government has at certain point changed this overall goal. Now we cannot say that basically we have this goal. But, I mean, it remains, the renewables remains one of the main objectives of the new government.
Jansenio Delgado, a renewable energy expert, was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Praia, Cape Verde. That's it for this Wednesday, June 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckfro, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as Post Editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Butt in Washington wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we look at reflections of what most voices on the continent say is the Africa that we need, meaning good governance, rule of law, and social and economic justice for all. That's next week right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.